Accession number 28355, reel number 15.
It's interesting, about this time, mid-October, 18th of October, Bush was fussing about U.S. embassy hostages and other hostages in Kuwait, and seemed to be thinking this was a casus belli. I can't remember the exact details, but you may remember there were a number of hostages taken in Kuwait by the Iraqis. Both our own and clearly some Americans.
And there was a 747 jumbo that was allowed to land and then couldn't get off again.
Yes.
British Airways.
And he was advised very strongly, this is obviously by Colin Powell, against using the military option before we were ready. And I think, you know, I think I drew the example of Carter and the Tehran thing. You only get one go, and it didn't seem to me that this would be the right sort of thing to do. There were various phases. Phase 1, 2, and 3 were sort of to do with the airstrikes and what we attacked, you know. Establishing a satisfactory air situation, phase one, and making sure that his sort of command and control arrangements and his offensive power was taken out, and then only starting to get into the land side. Well, we hadn't got ground forces out there. The air forces were out there in reasonable numbers, so you could have done the air bit. But why? It wouldn't have achieved, by this time we hadn't even got a political objective, wouldn't have achieved anything other than giving those who felt they wanted it, a nice feeling that they'd reacted because the Iraqis had been nasty to some hostages, or taken some hostages. And, you know, it was recognised the right thing to do was to get all the plans ready and then decide what to do, you know, not be sort of sidetracked by the hostages. And also this time I've talked about, you know, the military option and the long haul. The military option, you know, go and get him, the long haul, staying out there. And was there a third way between this? I mean, I couldn't myself think of one, but I felt that people ought to be trying to identify one, because the objective being to topple Saddam. As much as getting the, you know, if you've got Saddam out of the way, then maybe the Iraqis in Kuwait would come out, as it were, voluntarily.
Of their volition, yes.
Yes. And I remember mentioning this to the Prime Minister. But as I say here, we in the US owe it to those who will be killed in the military option to do our best shot on this. I mean, at the end of the day, there was no way. But I mean, I felt, for example, something like PSYOPs, you know, that we ought to be, even in those days, the ability to transmit messages and sky shouting and all the rest of it, that somehow trying to persuade the Iraqis to overthrow, you know, start an internal thing. I mean, I'm not suggesting that was the right thing to do, but what I was looking for was somebody coming up. I remember talking to MI6 also about this, because I felt, you know, we don't want to sit there forever. Do we have to go to war and get people killed? Is there, you know, let's see if there's anything else in between which would achieve, you know, a satisfactory outcome. And so, you know, one was in the business of doing everything, you know, you had to do normally one must also, at least I was certainly trying to find or encourage people to find for me something like this. We didn't come up with anything, but it was, I felt it was an exercise one I had to go through, at least my conscience pricked me to feel that I had to go through it. Interesting aside here, by this time Prince Philip was interested in what was going on. He wanted to go down and be briefed at High Wycombe. Tom King was very against this. In fact, the Queen, I think, also wanted to go. But the minister said no, so they didn't go. Extraordinary.
Did you ever learn the reasoning?
No, I never did. I spoke to Robert Fellows here about that.
Robert Fellows being the private secretary.
He was the private secretary of the Queen at that time.
Yeah.
Then towards the end of October, people were beginning to realise that, you know, if we were going to go in militarily, we needed much more on the ground than had so far been sort of earmarked or committed. And the Americans were looking, as it says here, good session with Colin Powell, ground force levels, need to get them up. And again, I talked to him about the lack of a political directive.
And that was towards the end of October?
Towards the end, that was the 25th of October. It was in the margins of a military committee, in NATO military committee meeting in Brussels.
You've said very little about the other, the Navy and the First Sea Law and the CGS, they presumably.
Well, maybe I haven't made it clear. Of course, there were regular chiefs of staff get togethers at COSIs. So, I mean, to a certain extent, some of the things I'm saying, it wasn't just off the top of my head, it was the result of having had a chat with BCDS or one or all collectively. So, you know, I certainly don't want to be represented. This is Craig going off on his own. I looked upon it very much as a team effort. I wanted the support and I got it from the chiefs of staff as individuals on that particular service. You know, we're talking about De La Villa, John Chappell. CGS and I spoke about it several times, you know, when it came to what particular type of aircraft go out to theatre. CAS and I would have talked about that. There's a long saga about the committal of a carrier. Navy obviously very keen to get that. But I kept running into constant problems with Tom King about that. If you wanted, the carrier was then, I think, wasn't even in the Mediterranean. We wanted to get into the Mediterranean and then get it through the Suez Canal, so it was on the other side of, you know. But that took forever, and eventually we never did get the carrier. But you know, part of the problem was that in order to send the carrier into that sort of environment, it needed additional work done on it. I can't remember the details. Beefing up some of its defence or computers. Anyway, there was a need which involved extra expense. And Tom King, we can't do that. Yeah. So there was a political resistance to getting the carrier. There was an enormous naval pressure, understandably, to get the carrier into the theatre. And, you know, and I agreed with the Navy. I mean, it was a capability. But I wasn't sure that the capability in the Mediterranean really mattered very much. If we wanted it deployed, it had to be, and we had got other carriers in the shape of the American ones down And the force levels on our carrier weren't going to be that great. It was only a marginal, but it was very symbolic. And it certainly seemed that if we got this capability, it should be a bit nearer, and certainly should be up to snuff in terms of its fighting capability. But one kept running into resistance. That goes right through, and eventually the carrier never did get there. or never did get there in sufficiently readied. So, you know, there are these various strands which are running through. So going back to your original point, yes, there are obviously the single service chiefs and BCDS were very much involved in what I was doing, although ultimately, you know, it was down to me to make the points in the war cabinet or wherever.
Which you attended on your own, did you? You didn't carry...
No, I was always on my own. I never took another... Well, I was never allowed to. I was lucky to get there on my own. But I was a member of the war cabinet. I wasn't just in attendance. And Tom King occasionally seemed to forget that I wasn't just there to... Yes, I know, so my big toe said to him. Certainly when we got into the actual fighting, I made jolly certain that it was I who reported to the war cabinet, not Tom. That's reflected in the minutes of that, those cabinet meetings too, that CDS said this or that or the other, which was as it should be. So I think I'm just looking through. I think all of this was very much on even in early November. I got a note which says we are we're talking about force levels going up, and we've now got, of course, another issue, which is the Mies of Thatcher, which is just beginning to raise its ugly head as far as she was concerned. So in early November, 5th of November, I've got PMIs down on political issues. James Baker on a visit to Saudi Arabia. And the Prime Minister and Bush had discussions. And out of all this emerged that three more divisions on the Americans are coming, going to be in theatre by mid-January, with two in by early December. So they were really, you know, starting to move. I mean, it says here, I don't believe it. That's me. I thought that this was rather more optimistic. This was Scowcroft, who was then the National Security Advisor in the Bush machine. And so, as I say, we're on a path to offensive operations, but politicians still do not seem to hoist in the seriousness of it all. Next day I had a much better discussion with Tom King on what he should say right to PM about more ground reinforcements, and VCDS was there too. And also I discussed it with Chiefs of Staff colleagues, you know, bringing out the point I made earlier. And the unanimous advice, and also Paddy Hines, that we must reinforce if we are to go to war. So the Americans are going to do it. Up till this point in early November, we hadn't got political objectives sorted out, we weren't going to go in the long haul, or whether we were actually going to go to war. But once the Americans had started to commit more forces, that was a pretty good indicator. Because they could manage a Roulement without having committed those extra divisions. But once they'd done that, they were going to be like we were, unable to do more than sustain the force you got in theatre, or cut it down, the points I was making earlier. But Tom King, it says here, not too keen to add many more. So there's some political unease about us building up. But that was, I mean, that was Tom King, because fairly soon after that, Prime Minister and Bush, you know, and Prime Minister, so I think I see her a couple of days later. Yes, 10th of November, speak to Prime Minister and Tom King briefly at Remembrance Parade. She said that we had been asked for much more. We would have to do our best. Tom King said the Prime Minister hadn't made any specific commitment. She had not stressed importance of political aims to Baker. And I took the opportunity of that particular thing and says I did to her.
Baker was the Secretary of State.
Baker was the Secretary of State.
Now you're being pressed, sorry to interrupt you there, you're being pressed for more. The Americans are sending three divisions, two to get there before Christmas, one shortly after or whatever. Did you think, when you heard that on the 11th of on Remembrance Day, that we were being pressed for more, that actually it was needed, given all these huge forces, American, that might be there?
Well, there's two issues in that. One is, what it was our contribution militarily to the total force out there, and it was, you know, in the 10-15% in numerical terms. In capability terms, you could perhaps jack that percentage up a bit. But I don't think, if you'd looked at it purely from a military point of view, the Americans had enough out there to do it without any help from anybody. The real issue is being a coalition and being seen to be a meaningful coalition. So you're then into a much more judgmental area of political military. What is seen by your allies, your American allies, as a significant contribution, so that they can say, you know, the Brits and others are light alongside us, we're not just doing it all on our own. You know, the politics of that, terribly important. And so, without any doubt in my mind, we had to do more for that reason alone. And then there was a case of, you know, how much more, you know, in measurement terms, another brigade was quite obviously the sort of capability. And then you could have a big argument about whether that was armoured or not armoured, and, you know, and the Americans were looking for armour. They wanted plenty of armour out there. So, you know, and that goes back to that debate earlier about Challenger and whether we can do it. So, you know, you'd have further discussions about just the makeup, but I felt in the time we're talking about here, there was no doubt that the Americans were going to up the ante. And with every likelihood that we were going to go to war rather than a long haul, then we could afford to up the ante, pretty confident that we weren't going to ever have to rotate people and get ourselves in the right old mess. So those are the sort of issues that were sort of in the back of my mind in deciding what... So, I mean, I accepted we had to do more. The Prime Minister wanted to do more politically. I felt, you know, both politics of it and the military side. And there was a further issue here, that if we wanted to have any sway at all in the Schwarzkopf planning, we had to have sufficient to say, I want to be at the, you know, the operational planning for the air side or the ground force side or for the rest of it. And if you've got just a man and a dog there, you're not going to, you're going to be seen off. You're not going to get the visibility of what's going on. And that would have horrified me, because you either didn't commit your forces because you didn't have visibility on how they're going to be used, or you let them be used without any confidence that they were going to be used in a way which you would find acceptable, and HMG would find acceptable. So I'm slightly repeating my point there, but so it was very important to have sufficient forces on the ground to get that entree to the command and control staff. So there are various strands there, all of which sort of tend to point in the same direction. Once you've got the political wish to do more, then that's married up. And the fact you are likely to go to war, then you obviously want to do more yourself. By now we're into mid-November, Lord Mayor's banquet, which I was obviously attending. Will Heseltine stand? Redrafted TK submission to the Prime Minister. This is all to do with this business of what our overall political objectives were. Bed at 2 a.m. Yet again, I do not see how we are going to get military act together in absence of a clear political strategy in writing for both US and our force commanders. I'm really repeating, you know, what I was saying.
But you need to repeat it because you yourself were having to repeat it all the time.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting when I go back. I've forgotten really just how much of an ongoing issue it proved to be. You forget about it once it's solved.
Yes.
But at the time, it was proving to be
absolutely
quite crucial. In fact, I'd forgotten how crucial I felt it was till I read this, reread this. Delaney reports U.S. ground planning still very soggy. So, you know, there was... Sorry, that's probably not very helpful. But anyway, there were concerns going on about this. And then just to show how ridiculous at times, we had a meeting on the 15th of November, a war cabinet meeting, which started on Christmas trees for troops in Saudi Arabia, which was one of the reasons why I was so anxious that we didn't waste time on trivia and why the getting the mandarins together beforehand, make sure that we focused on sensible topics. We had an argument about the carrier, PM4, TK against. Heat exchange on a Prime Minister view that we must pulverize Iraq military capability so he cannot re-attack.
There was never any suggestion at this time that perhaps from the Prime Minister that one should do more. That I know they hadn't set any political objectives except somehow get Kuwait liberated, but there was at that time no suggestion from the Prime Minister that perhaps one would try and do more than that.
We hadn't got a sufficiently clear political hour, other than that the Iraqis were in Kuwait and they shouldn't be there and they better be got out of it. But, you know, that's the easy bit. It was just how you did it. I've been over it before.
Yes.
Interesting little thing. The 19th of November, MinDP thinks we should nuke Iraq if necessary.
MinDP?
Alan Clark.
Oh.
Didn't get very much. Then, of course, we had, remember, this time, 20th of November, be ready to brief the Prime Minister on the 3rd of December and the Foreign Commonwealth Secretary. This is to do with political and military objectives and so on. If the Conservative Party election works out, then the PM got 204 and Heseltine got 152, the 16 spoilt, which was a mess, of course, as you remember. That didn't give her a clear thing. I went to Northern Ireland for a dinner there, I came back the next day to find the PM was going to stand. There was therefore confusion, you know, whether we were going to meet in a war cabinet or not, you know, absolute chaos for a little while. Anyway, 22nd of November, an amazing day in early to prepare for the a cabinet meeting. I was to attend, I haven't told you this, but I can remember. Normally, as I'm sure I've said on the tape before, just let me repeat it, the CDS attends cabinet subcommittees, the OPD or the equivalent, in this case the War Cabinet was obviously a subcommittee. So I would attend that, and then anything decided at that would be reported by the Prime Minister or Tom King to the full cabinet, who would formally agree it or take note of it. Now, we were in the throes where we hadn't yet had a decision to deploy additional forces, the other brigade, 7th Brigade and all the rest of it. And that would normally have been done in an OP, in a war cabinet, an OPDG meeting. But because of all the issues over the Prime Minister and the leader of the party, we hadn't been, that war cabinet meeting hadn't taken place, as I mentioned here. So, and yet the troops were about to go, and then we needed to get it formally approved by government. So it was the second item on the agenda for that particular cabinet on the 22nd of November. And therefore I was going to attend the full cabinet meeting, which I think is the only time I was aware CDS had ever attended a full cabinet meeting. The first item was Margaret telling colleagues that she wasn't going to stand again. Up till then, of course, and then she'd had the night before the interviews one by one with her cabinet colleagues would all more or less end, you know, get lost.
Well, the et tu Pute, yes, thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it was Charles Morrison. Charles, yeah,
he was her sort of chef de cabinet.
Chef de cabinet chap came out of the meeting with a very long face, the first agenda item. And so I was called in, and a space was at the table next to Tom King, straight opposite Margaret. And it was a very sort of tense time. There was tears in Margaret's eyes, and she said to me, Chief Secretary, what have you got to say to us? And because I was Chief of Defence Staff, not Chief Secretary, who is Norman Lamont. Norman, I think, had been sitting in my seat and had moved round to make it available when I came in. So there was a certain amount of lack of focus on everything. So I said my piece and Tom King said his piece, and it was agreed. And I must say, as I sat there, I wondered whether I should be saying, you know, Prime Minister, I'm very sorry, or Prime Minister, I'm very glad, I wasn't going to say that. Or what remark, if any, would be appropriate? And I decided, perhaps cowardly, that no remark would be appropriate. So I didn't make any comment. I just stuck to my brief and got on with it. And I went through the nod, because nobody was... if I'd asked for the moon, I think I would have got it on that particular moment. But it was, you know, it was quite a unique event. I mean, it hadn't started very well, because Tom King didn't even come. You know, normally I met with Tom King before we went to any of these war cabinet meetings for a brief, not always a very satisfactory one, but at least we did meet. But he didn't, on this particular morning, he didn't even come into MOD, it says. He'd gone riding in Hyde Park. Peter Morrison, not PM's PPS, yes. Shot out of the cabinet room with a grim face that knew that something was up. heard that she wasn't standing. Puffy-eyed, not very in charge.
Not very in charge, not much in charge.
No, not very in charge, yes. Cabinet quickly agreed a very significant increase, 16,000 of ground troops. And later Tongking had a press conference. And wonder whether Hurd, Major, or Heseltine will win the ballot, it says here. My money is on Hurd, but I do not think that he really wants to stand. Interesting.